Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Thursday, the 27th of August, 2015. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. The Alaska Legislature's Medicaid lawsuit gets its first court hearing today. The lawsuit seeks to prevent Governor Bill Walker from expanding the state's Medicaid plan next week, contending the expansion population is an optional group that cannot be covered unless approved by the state legislature. And the Alaska Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments in a lawsuit over the legality of a proposed voter initiative to ban set nets in urban parts of the state. KTVA-TV reports an attorney for the state argued yesterday that initiative would allow voters to decide how the state appropriates resources. The Alaska Fisheries Conservation Alliance argues that voters have had input on resource issues in the past. British Columbia's top mining official says he's open to involving his federal government in transboundary mine conflicts. That's a change from earlier statements. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has been following a series of mine meetings this week in the capital city, and he filed this report.
BC Mines Minister Bill Bennett went into the meeting saying the U.S.-Canada Boundary Waters Treaty wasn't the right place to address mining concerns. The treaty allows the countries to convene a commission to examine and resolve the potential for BC mineral extraction to damage Alaska fisheries. Then he spent 3 days touring the transboundary Taku River and meeting with tribal fisheries and environmental critics, as well as state lawmakers and officials. At a Wednesday press conference with Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, Bennett said he's more open to the idea.
We think that we can resolve most of the uncertainties by working closely with Alaska. I think you get more done at kind of the local state province level, but I would not foreclose or dismiss the future opportunity to involve the federal governments if they can help.
Mallott is actively pursuing federal involvement. At the press conference, he said he'd lobby the U.S. Secretary of State during his upcoming visit to Alaska.
I will seek a meeting with Secretary Kerry in order to hopefully gain the commitment of the Secretary that his department will maintain an awareness, will be ready to engage if and when asked, because we never know where this ultimately will take us.
Mallott admitted a meeting is unlikely, but he said he'll push for the State Department, which must initiate a request, to leverage involvement of the International Joint Commission, which addresses cross-boundary water issues. Mallott and Bennett said their meetings were productive and built trust. Both brought up plans for a memorandum of understanding addressing exchanges of information and expanded Alaska involvement in BC's permit system. Mine critics, in a follow-up press conference, agreed that the meetings were a step in the right direction, but they weren't enough. John Morris of the Douglas Indian Association and the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group said a memorandum of understanding is no more than a formal handshake.
We have to move beyond that and start getting something in writing, a good, solid, legal contract between our parties to prevent these kind of disasters from happening.
Morris was joined by environmental and fisheries leaders. Heather Hardcastle of Salmon Beyond Borders and Taku River Reds said she will continue pushing for both countries' federal government's involvement.
The International Joint Commission, to us, is the best forum to go about with equal numbers of experts on both sides of the border to look at what has gone on already in the region and what can go on in the future given these proposed and operating mines.
Hardcastle and the others said they were encouraged by British Columbia leaders' willingness to listen during the week's meetings. They also praised the Mallott-Walker administration for opening up its own process to get a broader view of BC mining's potential impacts to Southeast Alaska. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Extra tough boots are ubiquitous in Southeast Alaska. Yesterday, about 100 pairs of the brown rubber boots, along with photos of Alaskans, were on the steps of the Capitol building to protest mines in British Columbia. Lisa Fu has more on that story.
This day and this gathering is truly about celebrating clean water and healthy fisheries and the things that make Southeast what it is.
Edie Leghorn lives in Sitka. She's an organizer with Inside Passage Waterkeeper, a group focusing on clean water in Southeast Alaska. She's standing on the steps of the Capitol with about 40 other people.
Because this day is also about standing united as Alaskans to hold our elected officials accountable to the will of the Alaskan people, who have responded with a resounding not on our watch to the threat of mines in our Southeast Alaskan salmon streams.
The rally participants are carrying signs that say, "Get extra tough on BC mines," and "No more Mount Polly's." It's been about a year since the Mount Polly mine disaster in British Columbia, which spilled millions of gallons of mine waste into creeks and lakes. They don't want the same thing to happen at other BC mines near the border. Among the people and signs are pairs of extra tough boots. Caitlin Cardinal, also with Inside Passage Waterkeeper, says they represent the livelihood of people in Southeast Alaska.
We use and rely on these boots for our work that we do outside with commercial fishing, forestries, research. They're pretty much a staple in every Southeast Alaskan's footwear.
Cardinal says she brought about 200 pounds of boots from Wrangell to Juneau. Boots also came from other communities like Petersburg, Sitka, and Cape.
What we found through this project of collecting salmon stories and boots from Alaskans throughout the region is that Alaska is united on this issue. We have
Melina Marvin is executive director of Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. She met with Bill Bennett, BC's top mine official, who's traveling in Juneau and Ketchikan to discuss concerns about transboundary mines.
We really hope to send him and everyone the message that this is everybody. We don't always see unity on issues in Alaska. Certainly there's so many different types of people and controversies around many issues, but on this, people are united. We want to protect our salmon, our jobs, our way of life.
The rally participants want to see an international solution through the Boundary Waters Treaty, which was signed by Canada and the United States in 1909. The boots are being donated to Juneau's soup kitchen and shelter. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Petersburg schools open up their doors to students again this Monday, and teachers this week are getting their classrooms ready. Student numbers in the elementary school look to be up from last year, while the middle and high school are similar to last year's count. Principals in three schools say they're ready for the start of the new school year, and here's more in this report. Students in grades K through 12 have been registering this week for the upcoming year. Middle and high school principal Rick Dormer says there's a positive vibe in the schools this year.
We had so many changes last year, both with staff and with the budget. I felt like last year was rockier than in years past, and I think the excitement is with the leadership's been great. The work over the summer from the district office has been fantastic. It feels like it's really going to be a great year. I think there's really positive energy.
Petersburg changed superintendents in the middle of last school year and had to make staffing changes to fill in after the resignation of Lisa Stroh less than 6 months into her first year on the job. The district also had to wait until after school was out of session before knowing funding levels from the state because of an impasse in the state legislature. Because of that late hour for the state budget and uncertainty about staffing, the high school did not finalize student schedules until this summer. Dormer says high school counselor Rachel Etcher ended up putting in extra hours to finish those schedules.
We don't want to do this again, but just the way the budget, you know, was out of our hands, that we ended up, we came in and helped her a little bit, and we just had to make schedules over the summer. And we've been great. You know, some students we know well enough, we're able to send them a text and get some info, and then they, high school especially, always has a change. Time to change their schedules when they return, and that is that's what we're expecting. There to be more changes just as kids get exactly what they want, but they forecast and give us lists, and that's fine, and the middle school is pretty well set, so yes, we're ready to go.
Dormer says student numbers in the high school and middle school are similar to last year.
We continue to get new kids in, and of course, you know, some kids go or some kids are off in exchange, but so we have a lot of new kids. Class size are pretty much the same. The middle school will continue to get a little smaller. The 6th and 7th grade class are a little small right now, and we've got a couple incoming classes, so they're shrinking just a little bit.
Another change will be in athletics, as PHS is now in the 2A classification, reuniting old rivalries against Wrangell, Craig, and Haynes, while still facing the larger 3A and 4A schools in some sports. That change will mean a little different timing for some of the seasons this year. Staffers are also learning about a new teacher evaluation requirement in place this year. Former second grade teacher Terry Tolan took over as principal at Racy Stedman Elementary last year with the superintendent change. She starts up this school year in the principal's job and is excited.
It's nice starting the school year as in this position rather than halfway through, but I'm really excited for kids to show up. The teachers are very ready. Their rooms are becoming more and more ready each day, and it just looks very welcoming. But starting the school year in this position has been a challenge, but it's going well.
Parents and students will notice a change in the configuration of the elementary school this year with all the classrooms in one wing.
Staff got together and decided that it would be nice, since we have the ability, we can put all of the classes in this main wing, and it'll be good for kids to be able to see each other, teachers be able to visit with each other throughout the day.
That change means music class moves into the old first grade area, along with tutoring space, the gardening class, and the cafeteria. Meanwhile, student numbers are rising in the lower grades. Tolan says the kindergarten class is larger this year.
We have 44 kindergartners, and so that is way up from last year. We also have, at least 14 new students enrolled, and looking at some more higher numbers there too. So we are at a total of 212 students. Actually, it could be slightly more than that.
Okay.
But last year we ended with 188. So we're looking at classroom sizes that are between 20 and 23. Students.
The maintenance staff has been busy throughout the summer repairing and replacing aging parts of the three buildings. Among other changes, there's new carpet in the hall of the elementary school and new flooring in the cafeteria there, along with a new loading dock at the back entrance of that school. That entrance and the front door will also have wheelchair accessible ramps. There are also new steps at the front entrance of the middle school as well. The three schools also have some new teachers this year, although there are some familiar faces around the district for the most part. And coming up tomorrow on local news, we'll hear from those new teachers working in the school district this year. In other news, a new smartphone application is helping researchers learn where plant species invasive to Alaska are growing around the state. The Peninsula Clarion reports that when someone is using the Alaska Weeds ID app, they find an unknown plant that can use their smartphone to both identify it and alert a professional botanist of its location. Users take a photo of the plant and submit it to a team from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service. One of the five team members across the state then identifies the plant and replies. According to invasive plants instructor Gino Graziano, if the plant is invasive, he then calls the appropriate land manager, depending on who owns the property. To fight the cost of housing in Juneau, city officials there are considering property tax exemptions for some developments. Juneau Empire reports that in the most recent session, the Alaska legislature gave municipalities more leeway in allowing property tax exemptions. And the City and Borough of Juneau Committee of the Whole is now looking to implement their new authority. Municipalities may now use property tax exemptions or deferrals to encourage subdivision and development of property, as well as renovating deteriorating property. Deputy City Manager Rob Steedle will be writing the draft ordinances and later presenting them to a committee, and he's unsure when that will be. Officials in Anchorage are forming a task force to deal with the rising number of suspected spice overdoses. KTVA in Anchorage reports that the fire department there and Chief Dennis LeBlanc told members of the Anchorage Assembly that some of the more than 200 patients taken to the hospital with symptoms were frequent flyers whose medical bracelets were still attached from a previous visit. Task force will likely include LeBlanc along with Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz and Police Department Chief Mark Mew, who said homeless people are being targeted. Assemblyman Paul Honeman proposed passing an emergency ordinance that would bump up the penalty for possessing a package of spice from a violation to a misdemeanor. State health officials are investigating what chemical in the drug is causing negative reactions in Alaska's largest city. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.